You're listening to a free show on WrestlingObserver.com, the leaders in news and inside information on both professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. To learn how to subscribe and get immediate access to hundreds of past newsletters written by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as thousands of hours of podcasts and interviews, go to bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. That's bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. Well, there's a whole lot of news and crazy stuff happening in the world of mixed martial arts, and that means it is time for the return of Josh Nason's Punch-Out, episode 36, coming at you late April 2016. I am Josh Nason, assistant web editor for WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. I'm glad to be back. I am not. I was not deported, not jailed, any of those type of crazy things. I simply just had a whole bunch of stuff going on. And there was a bunch of stuff for the website going on and personal stuff going on, all good stuff. But I was not able to do a show. I had some guests kind of fall through and blah, 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 and all that bullshit. But we're back, and we should be back here for a few episodes here in a row. And there's no shortage of things to talk about. Of course, we have the Irish guy, Conor McGregor. We have Jon Jones. We have Daniel Cormier. We have all kinds of other stuff going on. Game of Thrones is back even. So I brought in a guy, one of my old buddies. His name is Dwayne Finley. He is the senior editor for flowcombat.com. He was a writer for Fight Magazine. MMA Junkie has done all types of stuff. I guarantee if you're an MMA fan, you've read at least one of his pieces, if not multiple pieces. So he joined me for about 40 minutes. He was about to get on a flight or a few hours away from getting on a flight. He is all over the place. I tracked him down, held him down for about almost 40 minutes for a great conversation. We talked about a lot of news, a lot of his past, his Carlos Condit piece, and all types of other stuff. I think you're going to really enjoy this. So without further ado, Josh Nason's Punch-Out is back. Let's get to Dwayne Finley from flowcombat.com. There's a saying that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, but in the case of our guest tonight, he's a hard worker and he has talent. After what seems like a lifetime writing memorable pieces for every major MMA media publication on the planet, he now finds himself in a well-deserved spot as a senior editor for flowcombat.com, part of the Flow Sports family. We welcome to the program Dwayne Finley. And Dwayne, I got to ask you the tough questions first, even though you and I have known each other somewhat for a while. So I hope you're ready. Have you ever thanked someone for giving you cheese?
Actually, I don't do dairy, man. I can't really say I have. That was a great question, though. But yeah, I don't do dairy at all.
Huh? Okay, that's good. See, it's good as someone that has interviewed almost everyone that there is. I'm glad that you gave me a compliment that I actually asked a nice question. That's good. Makes me feel good.
Well, hey, not only is it a pleasure to be here. That was a hell of an intro. But yeah, that was a great lead-off question. Like, you know, when you go to therapy, not like I've ever been to therapy, but I hear that they ask you warm-up questions, like, what's your favorite animal and things in the like. You know, you ask me about cheese, that puts me on my toes. I'm ready to rock and roll with you, brother.
I like it. So as we're hearing some, it sounded like some Texas music in the background. What was going on there just a second ago?
Oh, yeah, you know, if it's God, guns, and Jesus, you know, like a NASCAR, probably somewhere in the middle. But Texas is awesome, but I'm not trying to put it down. It's a little different being from the Midwest. So there's always, and I'm in Austin, man. So there's live music everywhere. You can't throw a rock without hitting somebody with a beard or flannel shirts or skinny jeans or craft beer. So I think if you're into those things, then Austin's the place for you.
Boy, three of those four things I like. The thing is, the skinny jeans I don't like. Everything else sounds fantastic. So You're down in Austin, Texas, because as I said during the intro, you have this awesome new project that you're working with. Instead of me trying to fumble around it, why don't you explain what you're doing and some of the very familiar people that you're working with?
Yeah, man, it's a cool situation. I'm working for I'm the senior editor at Flow Combat. We're a new site in the MMA space. I'm sure anybody who's familiar with MMA also knows about Flow Wrestling and then Flow Grappling. So it's in the Flow Sports family. But the big thing here is, like you mentioned in kind of the intro, you know, I've done a specific thing for a very long time, and that thing's always been storytelling. So when this opportunity came my way, at first, I didn't know if it was quite the animal, that I could ride, or, you know, it'd be the thing that would fit me. But when they gave me the chance to shape the site how I want to do it, then I couldn't say no, because this is what we have. I mean, granted, you're going to see some new stuff. You know, Connor announcing his retirement and this whole pissing match of the UFC. You got to write about that. Yeah, you know, but what we don't see is we don't see feature pieces outweigh the news. You know, it's always news 24/7 at Flow. That's there. I mean, we're going to have, you know, you're going to have your updates up, but we've got these in-depth features. You know, the project I did with Carlos Condit and these lengthy projects like I did with Matt Mitrione when I was in other places. You know, now I have a film crew with me. Now I have people who support and believe in me. You know, and you've worked in this business for a long time, man. Just to get somebody to pay for your damn flight and believe in you, and you don't have to stay in a hotel room with six other people. I mean, that's what people don't understand about this gig, is that you could be the Chuck Mendenhall's of the world, or you can be, I mean, granted, Ariel's earned his place, but, I mean, everybody else is scraping by, bro. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we're hustling for what we get. So when I got a chance to do this, you know, granted, it's going to be, you know, a lot of travel, but I travel anyway. My family's used to it. But it was really my chance to shape something. So we're off the ground. It's about 2 weeks now. We're doing great, and I think we've arrived. You know, there's a long ways to go, but it's a fun thing to build. Like you mentioned with the other personalities, you know, I got the old FR Bizzle working right behind me doing his thing. So I work with Brian and then Jeremy Botter. So it's kind of like Three Amigos is rocking it out.
Yeah. It's so people obviously will know your name really from in like your byline, because you've written for everywhere. I mean, I you and I have never met. We actually never talked, but we've been on plenty of email chains because you and I worked for Fight Magazine at the same time. And you would hit cover after cover after cover. And it just all of a sudden you're like writing here and writing here. And, one of the things I mentioned in the intro is that I don't think anyone could ever accuse you of not working hard or earning what you got, because you have always just been out there, not just trying to talk to, like, you know, the upper echelon people, but you talk to all the people coming up in between at different stages, and a storyteller. I think that's that's a great way of putting what you are and kind of what's brought you to this space where you get to use all that and try something a little bit different.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is that now I see that being used a little bit more, because the whole thing is, you know, I'm not a journalist. I've never been a journalist. I mean, I came from a creative background. I didn't come from journalism school. So my carving out my place in this sport was about storytelling, and it's never been about, you know, the names for me. It's about what stories interest me, and that's what I've always done. And it's cost me, you know, and it's probably why I bounced around a little bit. It's cost me some. I probably missed out on a lot of opportunities because I wouldn't bend on how I do things. So, I've been everywhere, but it's kind of the idea is that I just refuse to stay down. You know, like, if whatever happens, like Bleacher Report thing happened to me last September, you know, I'm just doing what I do. So I believe in it that much, and good things happen to good people, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, what is your, out of all, this is a tough to answer, but what is your favorite piece that you've ever written?
Oh, that's actually pretty easy to answer, man. That's got to be the Carlos Condit thing I did with MMA Junkie last November. Changed the whole thing for me. I mean, not only opportunity-wise, because the Carlos Condit project opened up the door for this current job, but it really allowed me to kind of get in there and change the way stories are told in this sport. The idea that you could get embedded in a championship fight camp and to see, to really see inside somebody's life who's as private as Carlos is, it altered how I see things, I mean, Carlos is a fascinating guy, and that's what matters, man. It's like, if I can find somebody that has an element that fascinates me, like a Frankie Edgar or a Dustin Poirier, like, I want to know how these guys are so decent and so good and giving in their real life, but then in there, something changes, and they turn into animals, man. Like, they're made of steel. And you see these guys with their kids and with their wives, and it's amazing. But that doesn't transition in 15 minutes of watching a fight. So you need people to go out and tell those stories. And I have time and time again jumped out in there to do it. I drove across the country with, I pitched a story at the Bleacher Report. Bleacher Report wanted nothing to do with that road trip.
Yeah.
I still went. I still did it. And that's one of the things that led to me getting this.
Yeah, and you're talking about we'll link it in the story, the UFC 195 Fight Journal, 6-part piece that ran from, I think it was November to, or actually in December last year, and yeah, it was kind of innovative stuff, and obviously for an online publication, everyone knows, and yeah, it's kind of fun that it's tough to find, like, ways to innovate these days, because there's so much content out there, right? It's a big challenge, and how do you take a video aspect but also mix it with the text aspect, and how do you tie all this together and also make it stand out so it's not just one of, a thousand other things that people could read, but that people kind of stop to read and kind of have that buzz factor? It's a big challenge these days, and I don't know if it's going to get any easier, but obviously that's kind of what you guys are looking to do at Flow, is try to figure out how to take and tell stories and do things that are really going to stand out, but maybe not in the way that every other single person is doing, or every other single website is doing. It's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, and that involves, like you said, that involves some risk. If you're not going to write the Rousey versus Mayweather headline or the next, whatever, then you have to be able to kind of risk it all on the fact that you can actually grab attention for telling these stories. Carlos Conde, granted, it was a big platform with USA Today and Junkie, but that showed that people want those kind of stories. Like, they want to know more about these people. And granted, it's not training camp stuff or, hey, how is this, or the same interview that every other person has at every other site, soundbite, yeah. Asking DJ why he's, are you upset that people leave when you fight? It's like, come on, man, like, dig, do the work. But here's the thing. We're not really afforded that time at these other big sites. Like, hey, look, you got to flip this content around. So you don't really have time to go to Albuquerque for a month and to see somebody's life like that. So, all truth be told, I was probably 1 foot out of MMA when I did the Carlos thing. I just kind of rolled the dice I had left that, hey, I want to do this. I want to do it in my style, kind of Gonzo-ish, kind of change it up a little bit, and then look what happened. It's pretty nuts.
Interesting. Wow. So how did you mentioned you had a creative background. How did you first decide to start writing and creating MMA content way back when?
That's a good one, man. Actually, my first gig, and this is before the heel turn, but like, it was, I was working, my first gig was for BJ Penn. I started working with BJ
kidding.
JD.
Wow.
Yeah,
right.
back when BJ was first launching BJPenn.com. I had been writing other things and doing a bunch of like advertising freelance stuff from, I had a neighbor who was like, hey, man, we can't figure out this bank advertising platform. Can you write up a little ditty? So like for like radio spots and whatnot. And I'd always been a fight fan, and then somebody knew somebody who knew somebody and just kind of came my way. Say, you know who BJ Penn is? I'm like, absolutely. And he said, well, he has a site. And I saw they're looking for writers. And then here we are, 8 years later.
Man, that's crazy. An overnight success, 8 years in the making.
Yeah, everything we've talked about up to this point, we've kind of made it clear that there was no overnight success, that this has all been kind of digging and grinding and refusing to, that's the thing, man. Like, I have so much respect for all, and I have such close relationships. Some of my best buddies work in this sport, but I'm not like everybody else, you know, and I think you probably know that. I mean, I'm a different kind of dude. My family matters to me more than anything. And it just, I have zero ego. So it's kind of weird to be in this spot where, you know, I have this job now and I have this new different kind of direction and focus, but it's the same old me, you know. I'm the same dude from Indiana, you know. I that's what I do, man. It's just I like telling stories, and now I get a bigger platform or a more unique platform to do so.
Yeah, very cool stuff. And again, you work with some really good people in Front Row, Brian, Jeremy Botter, and obviously a lot of people that we have not met yet in the Flow family. I'm sure we will over the next few months and so on. Let's transition. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. So you and I were supposed to talk last week during all the whole Conor McGregor stuff, and obviously just everything went to hell, went crazy. So we were able to do it this week. There's no like less shortage of stuff to even discuss. In your mind, so we have our UFC, as we record this Wednesday night, we have UFC 200 main event is finally set. We have the John Jones fight, UFC 197 this past weekend. We have still some leftover weird stuff from the whole Conor stuff. Out of everything going on right now, what in your mind's kind of, what is of most interest to you news-wise?
Well, I'm really digging this piston match between the UFC and McGregor. Okay. I think that's the most fascinating stuff right now because, I mean, it's kind of, they created this monster. You know, this is their Frankenstein. Like, they created him. He figured out he's a smart enough guy that figured out he had the leverage to weigh some things. Did he make did he roll the dice and get his bluff get called? Absolutely. You know, I'm sure he didn't think that they would pull him out of that, but they did. And what's crazy about it is that I think the matchup that they replaced with Jones and Cormier, the rematch, that makes far more sense, you know, for that show, because we had Frankie and Jose Aldo fighting for an interim title, and you have the divisional champion fighting two weight classes up in a rematch. That makes no sense. So I think it's all kind of fascinating, interesting time for the sport as they kind of jockey around superstars, and, you know, we're getting to see guys like Edgar speak up, and, you know, people aren't exactly happy about things. So, yeah, I think for guys in our spot, it makes it interesting.
Yeah, the whole Conor thing, man, it was I don't know what else can be said about it other than, you know, someone was asking me about this today. It doesn't make any sense why these two are going at it like this. But I think we saw the seeds of this planted way long ago when, you know, Conor was talking more about, you know, the McGregor promotions and all this type of stuff. And Jeremy talked about there was some rifts there between the two sides. And of course, you know, everyone, UFC was denying that and blah, blah, blah. But you could tell there was some kind of something going on, and to have it publicly play out the way it did on a social media platform, not only with the retirement announcement, which nobody believed, to, you know, just a couple days ago saying he was back on the show. And of course everyone's like, he is. And then it was that weird kind of like, is this guy bullshitting or what, like, what is going on here? To, yeah, I mean, he's kind of lost his leverage in a way. And this, like, at the beginning of this, before the McGregor fight with Diaz, it felt like nothing could go wrong for him. And now you put it, you know, we sit here in late April, and now he's got, not only we don't know when he's going to fight again, but we don't know what we can believe from him. And it just, his whole, like, you know, aura and psyche and character and this whole thing, like, everything has changed completely. It feels like a completely different guy now. It's weird.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to figure that he saw what happened to Ronda Rousey, right? You know, I mean, Ronda went from being the, you know, the star of the athlete of the year and all of these Hollywood movie deals and yada, yada, yada. And then she gets dusted by Holly Holm, and then now they're all going away. I mean, nobody's saying that, but if you look on the IMDb, you know, all these movies don't have production dates anymore. Mm. You know, like, we're not going to see Ronda in Roadhouse or whatnot. So I think McGregor's playing his hand right. I mean, let's look at this. Let's just be brutally honest. McGregor avoided wrestlers, and the UFC helped him do it. Okay, now there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's kind of the Dan Hardy trajectory, if you will. But now McGregor's stuck between two people. He's stuck between Nate Diaz and Frankie Edgar. And I'm not really sure how much, you know, he wants a piece of either of those guys, especially since, you know, like, he's like, if you look at his statement, what he said was, hey, I got to do all these promotional things, And then I'm fighting a bigger man who's already beat me. I need to train. He can't knock. If he can't eat, you know, it had to do something to Connor that he hit Nate Diaz with everything he had, and Diaz walked through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's something psychologically that happened there in a fight. Now, do I doubt that? Do I think that Connor doubts himself? No, I don't think so. I think, you know, getting finished probably stung a little bit, but you saw the way he handled that post-fight stuff, man. He handled it like an absolute champ. He handled it impeccably, if you compare it to the way Rousey handled hers and the backlash that came. So what we have now is, I think we have Connor looking at like, hey, man, I'm kind of in a tough spot. There's a lot on the line for me. If I lose again, I'm screwed. So let's get as much money as we can out of it.
Yeah. So are you assuming that the next fight will be the him versus Edgar Aldo? Do you think that's going to be the way it's going to play out?
Yeah, I think it has to be, honest with you, man. I think, you know, and the way the UFC played their hand here by pulling him, I think, you know, they wouldn't do that if they didn't know they could, you know, they had the Madison Square Garden show in their back pocket. I really do think we see Connor versus the winner of Frankie versus Jose on the New York card. I think we see the return of Rousey on the New York card. I think they're going to come out with a bang there if they lobbied so hard and spent so much money to get it legalized. I think that's the... I think this thing will all turn around here. Because, I mean, who's, you know, like Ben Askren said this week, you know, when I interviewed him, like, who's really, you know, crying about promoting a fight 3 months out? You know, like, there's something else going on here. And, you know, it's got to be about money, you know?
Yeah, it always is, right? It always is. Speaking of money,
always.
UFC 200, we finally a show that's going to make hopefully should make a lot of money. I don't know. Were you expecting, leaning in this, that the UFC 200 was going to be as big as 100, or were you kind of feeling like, you know, it can't possibly be that big, or is it? I guess I kind of got caught up thinking like this is going to be this major cultural mainstream event, and I like 100 was, but it's in a lot of ways it's a completely different sport than it was back in 100, just the amount of events and stars and. And all this stuff. I mean, what are you thinking about the kind of build to 200 leading up to this point?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought I absolutely thought it would have the same kind of feel that 100 had, that it was going to be, you know, this crazy stat card that, you know, everybody just had to watch. And then you look at it, and then like 198 coming up is loaded. 199 is pretty stellar, and 200 is kind of like, you know, it doesn't have that appeal, but I think Dana and the crew are just kind of trying to salvage it. But like, hey, we're not done announcing fights yet. You know, it's kind of interesting that we haven't heard anything on Robbie Lawler and that title situation. But yeah, I agree with you. It just doesn't have that pop that we're all, that at least those of us, you know, in this hardcore community were expecting.
Yeah, I think it's probably because we expect. I mean, back in 100, and granted, there was way less events leading up to 100 than there are for 200, and the point you just made, when they started loading up these shows like 98 and 99, I was like, wait a minute, what are they going to have left that's big for 200? And I think it's just the personalities involved. Like even today with Jones and Cormier, I think as this kind of plays out over the next few months, I think it's obviously going to be, people are going to get more and more back into that fight. But I think just because the fact that there's no Rousey, there's no McGregor, there's no, like, you know, Brock Lesnar back in the day at UFC 100, GSP back then was a pretty big culture force. There's just no, like, big, like, cultural names on there. I mean, the closest you're going to get is Jones Cormier. I'm surprised they didn't try to push for the CM Punk fight to happen on this. Just something that kind of would grab the casual fan. I wonder if 200, the number is going to be enough. I don't know. It's just, I get a lot of questions going into this, and you're right. It's a good card. I mean, the fights look to be good. There's definitely talent up and down, but as far as just that big, like, wow, this is going to be a huge mega event. There's something missing. I can't quite put my finger on. Maybe it's a star power aspect of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. To think that we're going to have a UFC 200 without a McGregor or a Rousey or Anderson Silva, or, you know, anything like that. Yeah, it's lacking something. But, you know, if you look at it on the other side of it, all these fights make sense. So, but I think you made a great point by saying there were far fewer events leading up to 100 than the current like kind of dynamic we have now.
Mm. So 200. Before we get to 200, we had of course to get there. We had last Saturday night, UFC 197, at times it was an okay event, and other times it was kind of a boring event. We had John Jones, we'll start there, John Jones beating Ovince St. Preux, his return fight after more than a year off, winning the interim light heavyweight championship, a belt that kind of means nothing in the long run of things. What did you, were you as kind of like, and with Jones' performance, did you expect that level of ring rust? What were you left with coming out of Jones' win on Saturday?
You know, I was. I mean, I think we all expected this beast that we've seen, before the layoffs come back and just destroy OSP, because we've seen OSP struggle against different competition. And, it just wasn't the John we expected, and at least I personally expected. But it almost kind of makes sense. You know, Jones saying before that, like, ring rust is a state of mind and doesn't believe in it. Well, no, it's true. Like, it's true. You're in there with another guy who has a kind of a strange, rangy skill set. You know, he struggled. But if you look at it on the other side, he did dominate the fight. I mean, it wasn't close or anything. It just wasn't the, you know, all-out monster that, you know, left Lyoto Machida sleeping, eyes open on the canvas, you know, like, yeah. it wasn't that guy, but that guy is still there, and that guy is just coming back through the, absolutely probably the, you know, unquestionably the toughest period of his personal life and his career. You know, I think this is the right fight. DC is going to get him hyped, and DC's, you know, been thinking about him ever since that first one, so I think it's a great fight. I don't think there's a bigger... Or I don't think there's a bigger feud in combat sports right now than what goes on between those two. So I think it's, you know, I think it's awesome. I think it's the right call.
I think it's amazing how much, and this when this fight was first announced, it was supposed to be for 197, when they did the press conference. And I mean, that was one of Jones' kind of first public appearances since all the stuff went down. And the amount of people that loved Jones and the amount of people booing Cormier, it was... I mean, at the press conference today, I think DC played it up a little bit more. I think he was kind of more used to it, so he was doing his best to try to combat it. But that initial thing, you could tell he was just like, you know, why are you booing me? I did everything right. He didn't. I was just amazed by that, and people didn't want to turn on Jones at all. It's like a, you know, it's like the heel in wrestling, you know, the cool heel. People want to cheer for the bad guy, and he's, Jones, he's fascinating, man. No matter what he does, there's this thing of just people see him as different than everyone else, and they almost want to see him get away with certain things. And I don't know, it's fascinating to see the dynamic of kind of who's the face and who's the heel in this whole build to this fight.
Yeah, I think it's like the age old adage, like people want their fighters bad almost, like. Like, yeah. You know, they want to live their everyday lives, and then they believe that these guys are absolute, like, you know, badasses. And, you know, and for Jones, it's been a great turn because he's being who he is. He's not trying to be this guy or pretend anymore. He's being the heel he kind of always was and stop trying to save face. For Cormier, it is pretty fascinating because he's just such a good dude, you know, and he does have a remarkable story. So yeah, it probably drives him crazy to no end that he's getting, you know, booed while John, who's been arrested multiple times and had, you know, failed drug tests, whatever, is getting cheered. You know, but this is the fight promotion business, man. It's a weird animal, and it's just interesting to see how much people have kind of embraced Jones. I'm with you right there.
So you said something interesting there that, about fighters that kind of like, we want them to be almost the embodiment of us watching, you know, and I think with sports, it kind of, you know, it brings that out of you. Like people that have played sports, they kind of like, you know, they have the normal 9-to-5 job and they see this happening and they kind of want, you know, they want, it's like exercising kind of these demons that they have in their own heads. In talking to all the fighters that you have, do you get a sense that the fighters understand kind of what they are to these people? Do they get that they're kind of the embodiment of this aggression that people kind of wish that they could unleash, and that they're kind of the embodiment of that, or do they they not really understand kind of what that is to people?
I think some of them do, but I think that's a pretty rare thing. I think most have a insulated focus, you know, like, hey, I'm doing this for me, I'm doing this for my family, I'm doing this to fulfill my competitive ambition. I think the bigger fighters who have been exposed to more things and had some media push, yeah, they kind of get it. Like, but then there's also the guys that are absolute fan favorites, like Carlos Conda and the Diego Sanchez. I mean, they know they're warring for them, but they're warring for you too. You know, like Conda said, if you could tell his reaction after the Lawler fight, you know, where a lot of people thought he won, and he wasn't that upset. You know, he was like, hey, you know what? I wanted to give people, if this is my last fight, you know, I want to get, and you know, he hasn't come out really said if it is or not, but he said, I want to put on something that people won't forget. You know, so that's giving, that's self-awareness there of saying, hey, look, I know people feed off this. I know people enjoy watching me, you know, do something that I commit myself so heavily to. So, yeah, I think a few people in this sport kind of get it. Like McGregor certainly gets it, you know, and I think Jones is starting to understand it. But I think the other ones are kind of more blue-collar Lunsdale types, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. With Condit, I can't help but think he's always one of the most underappreciated fighters that UFC has had or essentially brought in by acquisition from the WEC. And because he's just been consistent, he always puts on good fights. But I think people, I may not even really may kind of realize what they've had to see when until he's gone and maybe have a chance to kind of look back at this just body of work that he's put together. It's, it's really impressive. He's fought against the best. He's puts on exciting fights. You rarely hear or see a dud fight of his. He's, I feel like he's underappreciated. Maybe we don't kind of understand what we're seeing here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you look at his roster or his resume, he's never had an easy fight in the UFC. Not one bit. And he's gone at every one of them the same way. I think that's a one in a million right there. Mm. You know, I mean, you think that he was winning on those cards going into that fifth round of the Lawler fight. Didn't want to coast. It's not him to coast. He's going right at him. Win, lose, or draw, that's the way he fights. And that's the thing that when you do these projects, you do these stories, you figure out that this is a guy who would not take the path of least resistance if it was there because he can't learn from it. And that's a remarkable thing. These guys aren't guys that are dumbasses or brutes that are going out there just to fight because they're gorillas. These are guys that are smart. These are family men. These are people that some of them are, you know, college educated. There's something else there that pushes them. There's some other kind of draw to compete and fight that way. There's something visceral there. So those are the things that fascinate me. Like I said, you know, I mean, it's there's guys you can see it that it translates off the screen that make you understand a little something that you wouldn't understand before. Where most people break, they don't break because everybody does break eventually. But you know, what does this guy have? What does a Frankie Edgar have where you can survive that first round from Gray Maynard and go past where you thought you could, and then that something special comes out of you? I mean, that's the, you know, we always use cliches like, you know, oh, you know, the heart of a lion or, you know, all these things. But no, man, it's something that's difficult to explain, but fascinating to watch. And I think that's why we love combat sports. That's why we love the Gotti Ward trilogy. That's why we love Melendez versus Sanchez, you know, or the Edgar Maynard, you know. That's why we love it, man. Like Lawler, McDonald, Lawler, Condit. It goes on and on. You're watching something special. You're watching two human beings do something that they probably didn't even think they could do. But there's also a dark side of it. We're watching them do damage to one another. So, I mean, it's kind of the waiver we signed, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So in thinking through that, you know, you talk about the wars that people go through, and wars is another cliche term, but just this just amazing emotional, physical toll these guys take, and we remember the amazing fights, and we remember it seems to be those amazing fights that kind of bring the aura around someone up, right? And I just think through all these different circumstances of guys that may have been like, we kind of, they're good. Then they have this amazing fight. I think of like Lawler McDonald that happened last year, or a lot of the Condit fights, very similar stuff, where they just kind of elevate their persona. I think, to me, I keep thinking through this whole Demetrius Johnson thing that I've talked about here before. He just, you know, he doesn't have this competition level because he's too damn good. Guys can't really fully develop because they're kind of thrown to the lion before they have a chance to even fully develop and fully get ready. I think the thing that may be hurting him in the public's eyes in terms of like really caring that he's a fighter, I think is that he hasn't had one of those back and forth competitive fights that he's, you know, similar like Jones Gustafson. I think that turned a corner for him in a lot of ways. He was a pretty, obviously he was doing great things before that, but I think that changed that kind of like, he's a tough guy. You know, he's a tough MF-er. I think with Johnson, I think there's, to me, there's something missing there. And I think maybe that might be it, is that we haven't seen him really have to go to battle, you know, for five bloody rounds in a fight where just, you know, just looking at the guy at the end of the fight and just hugs him and just like, wow, that was a fight. And then it's like, I don't know, you know, that I was it was an amazing fight to watch. Am I crazy in thinking this? Do you think this? I mean, where are you at with the whole DJ thing?
No, I think you're right in a sense, but I also think it's the size. You know, going back to what I said about people want fighters a certain way, people tune in and they see a guy that came to last with Roy Nelson, and they're like, man, that guy could kick the snot out of me if I ran it into an alley. You know, you don't, like, as a full-grown man or a guy who was like 200 pounds, you don't want to sit and watch and say, hey, you know what, that dude's 125 pounds, he would kill me. That guy's as big as my wife, and he would kill me. You know, it's kind of a thing like that. I think it's a perception thing, to be honest with you. But no, then you have the far and away skill set. You know, the DJ's something else, man. He's a phenomenal thing, and I hope that we learn how to appreciate him before his time's up, because you know very well that these windows are small.
Yeah, I've tried. I can't get into it. I don't know if it's a size thing with me, or as much as I love to see just those competitive kind of battles. And I worry about the division because, again, I don't think just because he's so good and he like stays so active, I don't know. I don't think there's enough time. Cejudo got a shot. I mean, a year probably before he's really ready, but there really wasn't anyone else. He played the part. He's like, let's go, let's do this. And I mean, we saw what happened. I wonder if as long as DJ is doing this, if he's going to be able to give anyone a chance to even catch up to him or even be close. I think it's a big problem for the division going forward. I don't know how to solve it other than him going up in weight.
Yeah, and that's a shame. Like, he shouldn't have to go up in weight to fight Cruz and whatnot. But there's a compelling story there, you know, with what happened before. But yeah, he's the only guy who was told to hold that belt, and he's fought a hell of a lot of game guys. So, you know, I think that's a problem that may never get solved, unfortunately.
So let's take our final turn here. A couple of random news and notes I want to ask you about. Something that kind of got lost in all of last weekend was Benson Henderson making his Bellator debut and losing his Bellator debut, which was, surprising in a lot of ways, but I think maybe size-wise we should have seen it coming, especially when he got in there in the cage. I think kind of the consensus after the fact is that 155 is definitely going to be his best shot at doing some good things in Bellator. What did you make of Henderson's first fight, and kind of how do you begin to rehab him from here?
Yeah, it was pretty clear that 170 isn't the weight he should be fighting at. You know, like maybe maybe Brandon Thatch was the best and worst thing to happen to him in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, because he got that win. But I just think that, you know, he was manhandled in that situation. So I think he'd be 155, and there's a lot of talented guys there. There's Thompson, you know, there's Chandler, Will Brooks, if they ever bring him off the sideline. You know, I think that's where he has to go. Was it a big hit for him? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of eyes on him. But Benson's a gamer. He'll be back, and I think he'll do it up.
Yeah, with there's interesting fights. I really this Will Brooks thing in Bellator, man. I just at this point, I wonder if it's past the point of no return. I mean, it seems just there's ill will on his end, pun fully intended. But they're on Bellator's side, they just don't seem to have any plans for him. Obviously, Chandler seems to be the guy that they really like. Obviously, this Chandler Thompson fight. I don't know if we'll get a chance to see Henderson Brooks. I'd love to see it just because I'd love to see Brooks actually get an opportunity to have another big fight against obviously a former UFC title holder. I think it'd be fun. But I don't know. It's just a weird situation there with Brooks and Bellator.
Yeah, and it's something that we haven't seen from Bellator, so I think it's interesting. You know, Brooks is obviously talented, could, you know, try his hand UFC, but we've seen how those contract negotiations and all of those things blow up, you know, Eddie Alvarez style. So I don't know. I mean, one thing that's apparent that they're not interested in putting him to work. So I think something has to give here, and I'd love to see, you know, Will Brooks is a talented guy. He could really be a great representative for that company. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Was there anything else from this past weekend, UFC 197 wise or Bellator wise, that stuck out to you as newsworthy?
Nah, man, it all kind of just blew by me, to be honest. this new job's been kind of crazy from dusk till dawn, you know, or dawn till dusk, whatever you want to say it. It's been full moving, you know. It's kept old Bo Stipe's busy. So yeah, I caught some fights. I caught some of the end of the card, but yeah, man, it's been kind of fast. It's like on hyperdrive, and then I'm flying out here in about 4 hours to Knoxville for this Valor 32 card. So I'm interested in working in a, you know, I spent so much time working at the top level and working with those athletes. I'm interested in digging into some of these smaller cards, you know. But you know, we can have that talk on another day.
Yeah, that was I think we have like hours and hours of more stuff to talk about. So we'll definitely have you back to talk about more things. One last thing before I let you go, I want to ask the upcoming fights before UFC 200. We have UFC 198. We have this UFC Fight Night happening with Almeida and Garbrandt, Rockhold Wyman 2, Rory versus Wonder Boy, Alvarez fight, Joanna and Claudia. What fight of those are you looking forward to the most?
It's going to have to be Rory versus Wonderboy. I think there's a lot on the line there. Rory talking about his free agency and, you know, kind of unappreciated money-wise. We're also looking at a huge changing of the guard. You know, Rory's been this guy who's kind of been on deck, the heir, you know, to GSP's throne. Wonderboy kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, with this new elevated skill set, blew through Johnny Hendricks. I'm interested to see how that one goes down, and I think that could have a real big impact of what's going to happen at 170 in the future.
I agree. Before we let you go, give you a chance to plug away, my man. Plug the site, plug your Twitter, projects, all that good stuff. The floor is yours.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you, my man. Hey, everybody check out flowcombat.com. It's a different thing in this MMA space, and we got a lot of cool stuff coming up. Follow me at Twitter, at Dwayne Finley MMA. You know, follow my colleagues, at Jeremy Botter. And then, of course, the infamous Front Row Brian. But yeah, man, I will. I look forward to catching up to you here in a few weeks.
Yeah, eventually you and I have to meet in person.
Yeah, we will, dude. Believe me, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Dwayne Finley, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week.
It's been all my pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
All right, hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation. I bet you did, especially if you're listening to my voice right now. That means you made it through the whole thing. So let's see. We've had Jeremy Botter on from Flow Combat. We've had Dwayne Finley. And maybe one day, who knows, maybe Front Row Brian could be on this show. You guys would be down for that? I don't know if the world could handle it. That'd be a fun interview. So hopefully we'll get that done at some point. And big thanks to Dwayne, and thanks to all of you for listening. So what's been going on? Let's see. We have trying to think of any other MMA news we didn't cover. We didn't really get to any of the other kind of UFC 200 stuff. You know, I was watching a little bit of the press conference today for the one from New York. It was also interesting. So the UFC people were fighters and such were on Good Morning America. My wife is home this week from school vacation. And she actually watched it. And she's, you know, being married to someone that watches as much UFC and MMA as I do, she picks up a lot. She has some favorites. She often comments on guys' hair. Side note, she absolutely loves or is fascinated with Enzo Amore's hair in WWE. But that's another story for another time. So, you know, she was giving me a full report when I came home on Good Morning America on Misha Tate. Said she was kind of boring. The girl from Dancing with the Stars, which is Paige Van Zandt, she was talking about her. And the guy, what's his name? John Jones, Dana White, all this stuff. So overall, she said it was a good segment. And it was interesting because, you know, that's a completely different audience, obviously, than most UFC and MMA appeals to, being, you know, housewives, mostly people that are home working, don't work, you know, older people, senior citizens, that type of audience, you know, working from home mothers, all this stuff that, you know, morning shows typically that's their core audience. and you have this whole UFC thing. So it's very interesting. I haven't seen any of the clips yet. I was watching some of the press conference. And at this point, do we really need to have fans still at these things? I just find it adds such a level of, I don't want to say amateurism, but I don't know. I'm all for the whole fan experience, but when you hear them just catcalling people and, you know, people are trying to give answers and they're just talking in the background, I don't know. It just, to me, I'm kind of over having fans involved in all of these press conferences. I think, you know, the open workouts, all that stuff, definitely, you know, weigh-ins, absolutely. But press conferences, are we still doing this in 2016? I don't know. Just kind of weird. So let's do a little bit of it. You know, obviously McGregor is still kind of the story du jour, this thing kind of floating out here. The people still aren't really sure what is going on with it. It's obviously been talked to death, so I don't want to keep exhausting the point here. It's just, you know, as it's been said ad nauseum, if you think that missing a press conference and a video shoot was the only reason that he didn't get going that show, I think, you know, you need to check yourself on the business end of things and how this works. This was trying to put him in his place, and in that whole tweet the other day about coming back, that backfired, made him kind of look like just average Joe. I don't know. It's just a weird situation, and it's really a bummer because he's a fun guy to cover and a fun guy to follow, and for a lot of people, obviously a fun guy to hate, and then all this stuff is happening. I don't know, man. It's just a real bummer how this whole thing's turned out. But we have some good fights coming up here over the next few months, and he'll get his next fight booked. I just hope they don't treat him like in you know, like every other fighter. He's a special guy, special case. And the sport is a lot more fun when he's on top. Other stuff has been going on. As you might have heard me, I was on Wrestling Observer Live a couple weeks ago talking about, NXT in Lowell, Massachusetts, talking about Samoa Joe, Finn Balor. That show is actually on WWE Network as I'm recording this. Hopefully it turned out good on TV. I want to actually check it out again. That was a fun show. And NXT is... It is something special. It really is. The crowds are into it. They're picking small venues, which is amazingly smart. Maybe they go a little bit bigger venue, but smaller venues, intimate stuff, sold out crowds, old school. It's a really just a great wrestling show. They're really doing something amazing here. And it sounds like a broken record, but when you go to this and you experience it and you see it and you see how much people are into it and, you know, basic wrestling. It's not crazy spot fest. It's simple, basic wrestling, and people are into the personalities. That Joe Balor match was so much fun. Again, the Chris Gerard, Tommaso Ciampa match. A lot of these times, this is the first time I've seen any of these guys perform live, and it's just, you know, just amazingly impressed. And that's when you go to a show, that's what you want to come away with, that your money was well spent, and I spent money. It wasn't like a comp or anything on behalf of the website. I paid to go. It was just an amazingly fun show, and walking around afterwards talking to a loyal site listener and subscriber, James Brown, JB, afterwards, and he was buzzing about it and talking to some other friends that were there. It was just a really fun atmosphere and just this amazing, like, wow, we saw something big happen with that title change. It was something to behold, something I'll never forget as long as I'm into the pro wrestling scene. I think that's probably about it for this week. Been talking for a long time. TV shows wise, obviously Game of Thrones is back. I just finished Master of None. I forgot to ask. Dwayne. He didn't really like the end of Game of Thrones, or he didn't really like the episode because it was kind of a little bit boring, or just a little bit underwhelming. And I forget, didn't get a chance to talk to him about that. Maybe next time we'll talk to him after the season ends and get some thoughts. I thought it was fun. And away we go with another season. We don't have that many seasons left. I think they're going to probably plan to do, I think, two more after this. So I get a feeling we're on that last stretch. So everything's going to be impactful, and hopefully it ends up big. Can you imagine how many people are going to watch that finale? Holy shit, that's going to be something else. Master of None, I just finished that on Netflix, and looking forward to Civil War in movie theaters. I guess I got some tickets bought for me today by a friend, so going opening weekend, so I can't wait. And that's going to do it for us. I'm done talking. Thank you all for listening. I'm back. Hopefully be back next week to talk a little bit more about this Rotterdam card coming up with Alistair Overeem on it. And trying to work on some other bigger initiatives for guests and trying to maybe build a bridge that was burned a long time ago. And I'll leave it at that. And I'm going to do some work and I'm going to see what I can do to rebuild a bridge. And we'll see if maybe we can get some special guests on here to cross that bridge. That'd be a lot of fun. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Dwayne Finley. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.